We're drawing closer and closer to the 2024 Mudbug Bash, so we figured we'd talk with the Waterfeather Boats about an awesome sneak boat they donated to give away at the event. Although it'd make for a great and sturdy duck hunting rig for those spots where water might be a bit of a walk or no motors are allowed, we're interested mainly in the carrying capacity of this bad boy and using it for a little public land water access whitetail hunting. You'll be able to get your hands on one of these awesome boats at the Mudbug Bash on April 13th at the Jolly Gator and even buy a chance to win it among a multitude of other prizes like a turtle box speaker, inshore and offshore fishing trips, hunting trips, guns, turbo kit for a mud motor, hydro turf, you name it, it'll likely be on the table for a raffle. Even if you can't make it, you can still jump in on our chance to win a Silencer Co. Hybrid 46. There's a link right down in the podcast description. Go ahead and scroll down there and get a couple tickets for that and grab those Mudbug Bash tickets too while you're at it. You wouldn't want to miss out on any of that. All you can eat crawfish boil, especially this year. So go ahead. I'll wait. This is your chance. Just pause and scroll. All right. While you were down there in the podcast description, did you see that link to the pound-for-pound most comfortable climber seat on the market? Click that Hasmore Outdoor Products link and use code UPO15 at checkout to get 15% off your order, and you can add an extra level of comfort to your setup this season. Let's cast off and slip into this episode. I'm your host, Will Krebs, and this is the Under Pressure Outdoors Podcast. All right, well, before we dive into this, because I seem to forget this, and I have the last few episodes, I forget to introduce people till we're like 20 or 30 minutes in, and I'm like, oh shit, I better go back and introduce everybody. I'm your host, Will Krebs. I got Jordan here with me tonight.
I'm here. Let's get it.
We got Nick.
Howdy. How's everybody doing?
And we've got Jeff Klump with Waterfeather Boats.
Let's get it, boys.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're sending us a boat down here to give away at the Crawfish Boil.
That is correct. We actually have a shipment going out down to – we have a dealer in Fort Lauderdale, so it kind of works out. We have a shipment going out, I think, next week. So we're going to swing by you guys and drop a boat off for you guys.
Hell yeah. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it, getting a look at it, because I'll get me one of those if I'm not fortunate enough to win it myself, because believe me, I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm gonna spend too much time up there at Sid's hanging out with it. I'm just going to go up there and maybe take a couple naps in it and
see how it sleeps.
Yeah.
Carve my name inside.
Yeah.
But that'll be at the Mudbug Bash here on the April 13th to give that away to a lucky winner amongst so many other prizes we have. Excuse me, but I'm looking forward to it. So, Jeff, how did Waterfeather Boats get started?
It was about 3 years ago now. Well, let me go back real quick. I'm from Southwest Indiana, and I'm a big deer hunter. I do a little bit of waterfowl hunting, but I was actually in like coal mine country where I'm at, and I was like doing a lot of water access for deer hunting. And I was using a kayak. Nothing wrong with kayaks, but as we all know, kayaks kind of sit a little higher. You just don't have as much room. I was kayaking some of my spots, and it's a little uneasy. You know, you're kind of top heavy, not a whole lot of room. I film all my hunts, so I got my camera gear. I'm a mobile hunter, so I use a Novix hang and hunt, and just and my bow. It's just kind of limited in room, so I was looking to do something different. Find something different that's wider base, and then that's when I started like looking into duck hunting boats, and I actually purchased a boat company called the Ultimate Predator Boats down in Arkansas. And then started talking to some of my customers and stuff of like, how can we improve this boat? So sat down with some engineers, designers, and revamped this new boat and rebranded as Waterfeather. It took about 2 years to sit down and talk to the experts of how we can make a better boat, the best hunting boat in the industry. Not just for waterfowl, but for deer, recreational, you name it. So that's honestly how it came about, from just trying to be safer as I'm being a mobile hunter. If I wanted to reach all audience for like deer hunters, waterfowl, turkey hunters, recreational, fishing, you name it.
I've flipped a canoe or two before, but I've never felt the butthole pucker factor like I did last year when we had a canoe full of expensive camera gear and everything else going down the Suwannee when we hit that one rapid that spun us for a complete 180.
Yeah.
And you saw the edge of the canoe come within millimeters of going under the water. How we kept that canoe upright. So it was two 65 quart Yetis slap full of ice and beer, the camera gear, all our clothes and like hammocks and stuff, because we do a 5-day trip down to Suwannee every year. Like this canoe is fully loaded, mind you. And we also went to the extra to put some Millennium seats in it, so it's nice and comfortable. And, yeah. And that sucker spun, man. Nah. We thought we picked the right way to go and avoid some rocks.
We traversed almost every ounce of that rapid like a dream. Like, we were ready. It was like, paddle on this side. And then, we look like a team going through there. And then as soon as the water calmed out, we were like, all right, we're good. And then next thing you know, the boat just whips a full 180.
It caught an eddy somewhere and spun that whole boat around. You could have played the Tokyo Drift. When it happened, the Tokyo Drift theme song was coming on.
Ding, 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 ding.
I mean, you think about how tight that Millennium seat is stretched across there. You couldn't pull it out of the crack of my hind end after that.
So real quick, I have a similar story. That's a reason why I redesigned this new boat called Waterfeather, because I was going into my secluded spot, and I was trying to put a secluded food plot, like a micro plot back in here, and I lost my camera gear.
Oh.
I lost my drone because I dumped it all over. I was like, all right, I got to do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. Like total loss? Like never found it lost?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Luckily, my camera, my 4K Sony camera, I had insurance on it, so I got a replacement on that, but I lost the drone. It was a really good drone, too, the thermal drone and all.
That's heartbreak.
But, I mean, yeah. Had we flipped our canoe, we would not have physically lost anything. May have been ruined, because if I learned one thing in the Army is if you don't want to lose it, you better tie it to yourself. So everything was tied to that canoe at one point or another.
The canoe is well anchored.
Yeah. Everything. You got the Yeti coolers in the middle strapped to each other underneath the crossbar, and all like my stuff is hooked on like the big S-beaner clips to my seat and all kinds of crap. But we still would not have been pretty. I don't know how much stuff we would have ruined doing that.
Ugh. Enough. Enough to ruin the trip.
What are you talking about? I lost a $600 watch on the second day. That's right. I didn't cry. Rope swing took it from me.
Oh, man.
But the water is no place to play around, man. And especially, you know, even like throw camera gear out the window. You be in the cheapest kayak with the cheapest bow. You bought a bow for $50 on eBay that's like the old really tiny dual cam Bear. It's like 4.5 feet long compound bow, shooting the cheapest sight, the cheapest arrows. But if it's dang 25, 30 degrees, like that can kill you flipping over in the water.
Oh yeah, that's dangerous.
Even if there was no monetary loss in it whatsoever, even if you had everything tied and you lost nothing, you still run a high risk of being in a lot of trouble. So having a stable boat is very important.
So extreme. I want to ask Jeff, what are some of the ways, because I mean, these boats look beautiful, man. So what are some of the ways that you improved this boat?
Yeah, so we wanted more room for the boat, so we widened the cockpit out. So I say the cockpit, the inner piece of the boat. And we widen like the base of it just a little bit. It's just under 4 foot wide. So how wide it is, obviously it's more stable. So you can stand up, sit down. And you're going to fall out of the boat before it rolls over on you. There's actually a video on us. So the lightweight of this boat and how stable this boat is, is what separates us. It's 58 pounds, and you can literally crawl into, if you're like chest deep water, you can crawl in from the side of the boat with it flipping over on you. But so we want a stable boat, more room, and we scoot the seat up a little bit, like where you can sit down, and put a dog platform back there too with a drain for waterfowl. I mean, his best friend's a dog, right?
Yeah, that's
right. So, and then so yeah, a dog platform that the platform does drain back into the water. And then just more room for gear. And light, very stable.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, even if I'm using this, I'm gonna use this thing for like deer hunting. That platform on the back gives me plenty of room to stick. I mean, I could stick my pack. I could stick all kinds of stuff on that platform and not have to have it down in that boat with me. Like, say I do shoot a deer and I got a deer out, and then now my deer's taking up most of the room in the front. That platform still provides plenty of room to stick a lot of gear back there.
Yeah, so this is new for this new release here that we haven't told anybody yet for your guys' podcast, that we have partnered with a engineered product development team, and what they're great to work with, and they have a boat, and they're just giving us all these endless ideas and accessories we can roll out for this boat. So people are like, oh, what, this accessory? We have the experts now on our team to help us out to get where we're trying to go to. So yes, that is coming for more room to keep. Like, I don't want my camera bag. I'm a scent control freak when it comes to whitetail hunting, so I don't want my pack in the bottom of the boat, because you don't know what's sent there, you know. So we have stuff coming down the road that's gonna, like, accessories that can keep scent free, like we're talking about, more luggage that won't be sitting in the bottom of your boat.
That's pretty awesome. How well do these boats paddle? I mean it looks they look like they're meant to be paddled. I don't see a transom style any on the back.
It is rated by Coast Guard for a 2 horsepower two horsepower motor for the back, so trolling motor, you name it.
Is it a little like a transom?
Yeah, that was my next question.
I was going to say, so what you're telling me is that if it's rated for 2 horsepower, some redneck's going to figure out how to put like a 10 on it.
Yes,
you'll see him in Florida with a 35 horse surface drive on it. I assure you,
15 horse long tail on the back of it.
I tell you what, that's pretty comical. We had the best customers, because they're like, hey, check this out, you know. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're doing that, but that's great. Thanks for the video. They just reinforced the this massive motor on there. I don't want to go into details. We don't recommend that, but
of course, people are doing, of course.
That's cool. Like, don't hurt yourself.
You get some of those videos and you're like, yeah, let me make sure my insurance policy is up to date.
He's already printing out the sticker to say that you can lose a limb doing that.
don't try this at home.
But it is. I mean, right. You see that everywhere, man. I've got a 12-foot John boat, and I've got a 9.9 on the back. It's only rated, I think, for a 5.
Yeah.
Something like that, but that's all right. No big deal.
I'd stick a 15 on it if you let me.
That's a suggestion. I had a 15 on it at one time. Didn't run it with it on there. We just idled with it, but there was a 15 on there because it was kind of the deal of it was me and AJ. He's like, I got a boat. We can go duck hunting. I was like, sweet. He's like, oh, my registration's bad. And I'm like, well, I got a boat, but it doesn't have a motor. He's like, oh, yeah? How big is it? Is it a 12-foot John boat? We can put my 15 on the back.
Send it.
I'm like, we are not trying to run this thing wide open with it on the back, but we can idle out across this little pond or whatever we want to go. And it worked. I mean,
you just need to sit more forward.
Yeah.
And then we can run wide open.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that boat, we'll put a 25 on the back of it.
Got to use the 2-strokes, make them lighter, right?
That's right. I'm that guy. I will beat you to your spot.
So are these holes on the side? I take it for like to put spuds through or to blind up the boat, or?
Yes, we call them scupper holes, but spud holes, scupper holes, support, they're actually support columns, so it holds the side of the boat up. It just gives it more support, more integrity of the boat. But yes, again, our designers, engineers are coming out with more accessories that we can use those for pole holders, for people fishing, to seats to you name them.
I tell you, down here in Florida, they're going to have them crammed packed full of palmettos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We sell a lot of boats in Florida.
I'd imagine you would. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm going to say we have a dealer, Chris Molinette. He's in Fort Lauderdale. He's just selling them left and right. We can't keep them in stock. We're just going. We keep going back and forth from Indiana to Florida. We're actually looking to have a warehouse in Florida because there's so many boats going through.
It makes sense. Like Jordan said, he's down by the STAs, the storm treatment areas and stormwater treatment areas, and those guys there. That's a no motor zone, right?
Yeah, it's all paddle in only.
Yeah, paddle in, and it's a lot of.
And you got
cattail and hydrilla and stuff like that. So those guys need to be able to have a good boat to paddle out, throw decoys out in.
Okay. So Speaking of that, I've only used a trolling motor one time. All my hunting spots, I use a lot of water excess. I just paddle because this boat's so lightweight, 58 pounds, and you're down in the boat. You just skim across the water. You feel like you're just scooting right along. It's simple.
So, how far of a paddle are you taking to a hunting spot in one of these?
Well, you know, like 20 mile.
Yeah.
Oh man, I want to watch that.
Oh, I have so many different spots. I mean, I have probably a good like 15-20 minute paddle spots. You know, like this. How far? I don't know. Never really. That's a good question.
Because I just ask because we have like some islands and stuff we like to hunt, but it takes us 15-20 minutes doing 30 miles an hour in a regular boat to get there.
Yeah, but you know the one thing when I thought about this, I was like, dude, this thing's perfect because it's so light that I can literally take this whole boat.
Oh, you throw it in that boat.
I would say throw it in my big boat because there's a lot of places that I can get with the big boat, and then you can only go so far with it. So you stop with that boat, or if I don't want to spook the deer, I'm going to stop early. I'm going to throw that water feather in there, and I'm going to paddle the rest of the way.
Yeah.
That's a big thing in Long Island, Pennsylvania, Chesapeake Bay, is that they take their big boats where they want to go, and they get in their water feather and get to where they need to be at.
Yeah, but it never ceases to amaze me. Even when we're duck hunting, you know, you're like, yeah, I'm way out here in this big old lake. And then here comes a dude in a kayak. And I'm like, where the did you just come from? Did you leave the ramp at the same time I did? Because it took me 30, 45 minutes to get here from the ramp doing 20, 30 miles an hour.
No, he left yesterday.
Yeah.
But he got there.
Got to do what you got to do. He slept out there last night. But man, I like the idea of being able to paddle in like that. Cause like Jordan said, I mean, I can think of a few spots where I would sneak in, and we also have like, submerged sovereign land laws here in Florida. That'll be such a gray area, but, in what is considered public versus private land. So, the way I've explained it to people before, submerged sovereign land, say you had a historic lake bed, and for some reason low water has dried up, and now there's just the creek that used to feed it flows through the middle where it used to be a river. All that lake bed is still considered public land because it was a lake at one time. That's the easiest way, I think, to explain it.
Yep, that's it.
So you could still technically roll up in there in turkey season and turkey hunt out in the lake bed, even if it's not considered like a distinctively marked public.
Yeah, they say it's within the 100-year high water mark.
Yeah, but like you go to the Suwannee River, man, up around there.
That's different. I know around here, like, you know, we live almost on the St. John's River, and you can go down the St. John's and just see. I mean, if you're in your boat, some spots the water, high water mark is a good 5-6 feet up that tree.
Right.
So if you can get back in there and you're still within that water mark, technically. Depends on what GW you get a hold of, but technically you're still on public land.
Right. And that's the whole, like, you can push it, but you're going to be the one fighting it in court. So, you know,
how big is that buck?
Yeah. Right. How bad do you want to hunt there? Cause like I mentioned the Suwannee River, I think we still got another 20,
maybe around about 20 years or so we can hunt, probably within 3 miles of the Suwannee on submerged sovereign land. Because you look at that, there's a bridge like where we get out of the river in Brantford that's probably 80 feet above the river. The riverbed where it's
high water is still like another
the high water mark. The historic high water mark of like 1940 something was about 3 feet under that bridge.
I love it. Something new to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have a lot of public water down here in general when it comes to duck hunting. As long as you, for the most part, as long as you can access it via public ramp, it's legal to duck hunt on.
That's awesome.
So, and we don't have, do not currently have a distance rule as much as a safe direction rule. Mm-hmm. So, and that, the distance rule also applies to deer hunting. So you could be right up on, if you're on a, and this has been argued with that too, when you're on public land and somebody owns a piece of property right next to public land, you can butt up against their property and hunt back into the public land, be 30 yards from their house. And as long as you're not obviously shooting at their house, trespass via projectile, you're good to go.
I like it.
Florida's a beautiful state for that.
It is.
I need to get to Florida more. I'm like stuck here. I feel very sheltered. I'm down here like Southwest Indiana, you know, like I need to get to Florida and do some hunting.
Here I want to go to Southwest Indiana and do some hunting.
Well, we could put you on a real nice 6-point.
Yeah. Hey, we could put you on a dang nice gator, I guarantee that.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of that, we just delivered boats to Gainesville, Florida, and the dude's going to take them out gator hunting. I was like, that's awesome. I want a picture of that.
He's going to use them to gator hunt.
You know, I've killed some big, I've killed some big gators in my life, and the sketchiest boat I've ever used was a 13-foot Ginu, and we got a 12.9 out of it.
Ooh, thank you.
And when we brought it back to the ramp, I mean, I never got my hands on the gator. He was dead. I bang stick him. I cleated him off, and I got back to the boat ramp, and there was two game wardens at the boat ramp. They actually watched me get that gator. And I said, hey, man, don't chastise me. I said, I don't have the tag in him yet. I was like, I came straight back here just to get my hands on him. And they're like, thinking like, oh, whatever, this guy. You know, I was like in my early 20s, you know.
Yeah.
So I backed the truck up. I cleated the rope off to the trailer I brought. And that's when I worked for the well drilling company. So I had the pump truck so I could lift him up and put him on a trailer. I knew he was giant. He was like 690 pounds. He was a big gator. And they were standing on the ramp, like trying to help it come up. And when his head came out of the water, they like took off running. They were like, oh, yeah, now I know why you didn't. But my buddy freaked out because he was running the motor and I was in the front of the boat. And I just held on to, after I harpooned him, I just held on to the rope and he planed us for 15 minutes. But the lake's super shallow, it was like 3 foot deep. And he's like, dude, he's going to sink us. I'm like, calm down, buddy.
You'll be all right. You'll be all right.
It freaked him out a little bit. I freaked him out and the game wardens out that night. That was pretty funny.
That's all.
So people have asked me before, who's going to take your job out, Gator? And I'm like, nah, no, we ain't doing that. If you're going to do that, we're going to stop at like 6, 7, maybe 8 feet in a 12-foot John boat.
I wouldn't recommend people gator hunt out of your boat, but unless they had some experience.
Right.
You know, if you got on a big gator, it could be a little dangerous.
I don't want to gator hunt out of even a 12-foot John boat. And I'm sure your boats are stable, but
I've seen gators jump in other people's into boats. Like, yeah. They're harpooned, and you're pulling them up to bang stick them, and they actually came into the boat. Like,
wow.
It can get kind of dangerous if you don't know what's going on.
Oh, sure.
But if they think, if this guy in Gainesville's got the confidence for it, I'd love to see it. I'm right there with you. Show me the pictures.
Because we go to so many different shows, and we love, like, we're trying to get photos from, like, different uses, you know? Like, if somebody's got a pic of them in the boat with a gator, that's just awesome, you know? Like, somebody fishing, for sure, to hunt, deer hunt, waterfowl, you name it. What's awesome about owning this boat company is that people use this boat for so many different uses. And so much positive energy. People, when they get the boat, they just like, oh, I can't wait. I'm going to do this, do that. Like, they just wear yellows. Positive energy is like, dude, that's awesome. Think about that. You know, keep it going, man. Send me some pictures and videos.
I know my son would love to use it for bass fishing.
Yeah. Oh, dude, we would have slayed some lakes with one of those things back in the day.
Have a little boat like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you, because I've seen, they got videos of people picking those things up with one hand.
Yeah, they're only 50 pounds. I mean, you think about how heavy the canoe is, or a 12-foot jumbo for that matter, versus a 50-pound little boat.
We lived, where we lived, we had a lake. Well, Lake Gertrude was down the road from us in Mount Dora. So we used to take my buddy's Ginu when we were like 10, 11 years old, and we would wedge a little red wagon underneath it as we pulled it up the beach. And we would put it on it, ratchet strap it to it, and we would pull it down the road to take it to Lake Gertrude so we could go catch bass. If we had that boat, oh my God, it would have been, we just picked it up and put it on the red wagon. You know? Right. We were like, heave ho, like we were building the pyramids, you know what I mean?
Or like, just carried it. I mean, you think about this, like I say 50 pounds, and you're like, oh, 50 pounds can be kind of heavy. But at what age did you start carrying a bag of corn to the feeder? A 50-pound bag of corn. It's really not that heavy.
No, it's not. But
and you can, with that hollow center, you could throw it up over your shoulder like a bag of corn and carry it.
It's nice to put it on a red wagon.
Yeah.
You can put all your gear in there and all your stolen Coca-Colas from your parents' refrigerator. And
So, Jeff, you said you use this for water access deer hunting. Where did you get your start in deer hunting?
I just grew up as a little kid, honestly, just from, I don't even know what age I started hunting. I think my dad just drug me around like rabbit hunting here in Indiana, you know, and going hunting. I remember like hunting with him a little bit when I was a kid, like deer hunting, but just, I just grew up in the country here and just, I just grew up the whole area, all my friends and family, cousins. So it's been part of my life.
Was water access like always a thing when you were growing up, or is it just something you've kind of gotten into yourself?
Just something I got in myself. I just want to get in a spot where nobody was at, where I was hunting at. It's not public, but it's a very large chunk. A lot of people, it was open to the public at one time, and they started giving a lot of permits out. So there's a lot of pressure. I was just trying to get in spots where nobody else was at. So that's why I just got into, I'm going to give me a kayak. And the kayak led me into buying a company, and then developing the boat. And then here I am. I'll never forget when I told my wife, I came home, hey, I just bought a boat company. She goes, what? You're an idiot.
Oh, that's funny.
Is she happy now that you own the boat company?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, there's so much going on. I'm very blessed, you know. Like, she's like, I can't believe this is going on right now. Like it just, it's very busy, very blessed, but sometimes it's overwhelming because the phone don't stop, you know, with emails, phone calls, texts. Because it's a new one of the newest, hottest thing on the market, you know, for waterfowl, deer, you name it, you know. So people are just wanting this boat and show season too.
How did you find him, Jordan?
Bro, I think I saw him on Instagram somewhere.
Popped up on Instagram?
Yeah, I think I was scrolling through Instagram and they popped up on Instagram.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a, it looks similar to, the only thing I can think of, I don't know if you've ever seen the plans to build like the little layout boat out of like insulation, fiberglass, and plywood. It has that same box top shape to it, but I know that sucker weighs, God, that boat's got to weigh at least 150 pounds.
Yeah, they're heavy.
Yeah, so yeah. So the boat company I bought, Ultimate Predator Boats down in Arkansas, that I just got a mold and how to build them and stuff, and we were making them out of resin and fiberglass. And we were marking them a little bit. We just couldn't keep up with the demand, and it was myself building them, and I got two other buddies that helped me build them too. We couldn't keep up, and it's just dangerous work, you know. It's fiberglass and resin, grinding it, cutting it. It's like, we're not going to do this, you know. Like, we're going to redesign this boat. We get so much feedback with this boat. That's, we're going to rebrand. we chewed on the name for the longest time. And when it came out, like the weight of the boat was like, oh, water feather. You know, it's lies a feather. It's on the water, you know. But yes, what you're saying that we were making resin and fiberglass boats for a while.
So how's the boat made now?
It's made out of polyethylene. It's a rotation molded boat. What that means that it goes in the mold. Proudly to say that the mold was made here in the United States, and the boats are made here in Indiana. So I'm a Marine veteran, you know, so made in the United States, veteran owned. We take very pride in that. But anyways, it goes, a bunch of like plastic pellets go into a mold, and it goes and it just circulates, rotates into an oven. And then after it goes in the oven for, we'll just say 15, 20 minutes, and it goes into a cooling system of, you know, it's one big process because you can't heat it up too fast, can't cool it down, you know, too fast. So yeah, that's how they're made. Roto motor boat.
That's how right. Yeti coolers are made.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if you've ever tried to beat the shit out of a Yeti cooler, I mean, the latches will break, but the cooler ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. So this thing is tough as now. Have you guys done any like torture testing on them?
We have, yeah. So our manufacturer that we gave them the fiberglass resin boat and also our boat now water feather, and we did impact tests, and the water feather will take more of an impact than the fiberglass boat.
I'd put my money on it.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, no fiberglass, the way it splinters and cracks. I mean, it's a great, for the most part, lightweight thing to use. It works great for canoes. But in the sun, yeah, it does wear out really easy, which we, again, back to the canoe trip last year, that was proven that fiberglass is not the end-all be-all, especially when you let it sit in the sun. But
the polyethylene will more like bounce off, you know, because there's no like hard edges on it. It's like everything's kind of rounded on it. So if it hits something, it's going to bounce
right
away.
Yeah, more of a deflection.
I would think that polyethylene is a little... It's going to give before it cracks or breaks.
Puncture.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's quieter, too.
What do you mean?
Oh, yeah.
Upon impact. Like, you know, if you drop something in the boat or...
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So if I'm trying to sneak in and I drop my headlight or drop my phone or something in the boat...
Which is going to happen.
Yeah. So do they have a plug on them or...
So we had a plug for, I don't know, the first probably 200 boats, and nobody was using a plug. So we just eliminated that.
Oh, so you could, at 58 pounds, you can just tip it over.
Yeah, it does have like a lip on like the top of the cockpit. So it is kind of hard to get the water out. A lot of our customers, what they do, they just take a drill bit on that lip, the top of the cockpit, and just drills holes in it. So when you flip the boat upside down, it just... drains out like a shower. Comes right out. It's hard because for the drain plug, it's got to be above the water line. So there's no really good spot for the drain plug. And so it's like awkward. Nobody's really using it because it's like awkward position. We got to drain the water out. It's like, all right, this is pointless. I mean, the theory behind it sounds good, but if nobody's using it, it's just, there's no point in it, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Let's take a break real quick. The Under Pressure Outdoors podcast is brought to you in part by Hang Free. With a mission to provide top quality products for the best possible price, Hang Free believes that the saddle hunting experience is worth more than money. They create both tried and true products as well as debut new items to the saddle hunting community, creating a community of saddle hunters that don't have to break the bank to participate in a hobby that they love. Do yourself a favor and join the Hang Free family this hunting season. They truly have everything you need. Don't forget to use offer code UPO10 at checkout for 10% off your order at hangfree.co.
So what's your favorite feature about your boat?
Right off the bat, I would have to say how lightweight it is, because nobody wants to wrestle a heavy boat and whatever they got, like out of their truck, SUV, whatever.
So how does I let you get into that, how does that weight compare to other boats on the market similar to yours?
That's a great question. I think I'm in the hot seat, boys, but it's good. Well, ours is different because how longer it is. It's 9 foot long. This ain't a fact. I'm pretty sure we have one of the lightest boats on the market for how long it is. Now, there's some shorter boats and stuff, and they're not going to be as wide, but we hit that little space where it's long, wide, stable, and very lightweight. Most of the boats that you see comparable to ours are, they're in the 80s, 90s, 100s.
Okay, so that's good. So, and that's the thing too. You got to consider, because I'm, like you said, I'm sure there's lighter boats out there, but are they as big, as wide, as long, as stable? And those are super important features, especially when you're talking whitetail deer hunting. I mean, I would say waterfowl hunting, you can get away with a little bit less stable boat, especially if you're not standing up, you're laying down shooting, because you're not doing as much moving or really hauling as much weight as if you were to you're up there in Indiana, you're killing a whitetail deer. I don't think it's uncommon to kill a buck over 200 pounds. You kill one here in Florida over 200 pounds, people would, you'd be in the newspaper. But to throw in, you know, you got a 200-pound guy plus 200 pounds of deer plus backpack and all the other stuff in there you're trying to get back out, that's a lot of weight. And to be able to haul something like that and still be in a 50-pound, right around 50-pound boat, speaks for itself. And that is, like you talked about earlier, I don't know if we were recording or not, but wanting to be in the mobile hunting game where weight is everything. You got guys wanting to shave, not pounds, but shaving ounces off of a system by drilling holes and pieces and this, that, and the other, just to make it just a little bit lighter so they're not going to carry it. And two, that can come into play when you're talking about, I access this piece a little bit by water, and then you have to portage and drop it somewhere else to access, maybe drop it into more water to power, to go a little further. You could cut a trip down miles that way by portaging 400 yards with a boat, dropping it back into water and going again. Especially if you're talking hunting a pretty decent sized creek with a lot of bends in it. I mean, we've looked at, when we're on rivers, you're talking a bend can be 2 to 3 miles long and a portage is 800 yards. So if you can carry what you've got, you can save yourself a lot of time, but that all comes down to weight. If you can't carry everything you've got in the boat plus the boat, you're stuck doing 2 to 3 more miles of paddling, walking, whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about like how lightweight the boat is, that's less work, you know, so less sweat and scent you're going to be leaving behind you too.
Right. So what's your second favorite feature? Sorry, I interrupted you there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So second is the stability of the boat. Like, so they go hand in hand, how lightweight the boat is, how stable the boat is. You literally just sit there, like sit down the boat, stand right back up. People use it for paddle boarding, like along the coast and stuff like that. It's just so stable. You're going to fall out of the boat before it rolls over on you.
And that says a lot. I mean, I know that you might think of that like, that's not a big deal, but I challenge you to get in a boat that small and try to fall out of it before it flips, before it throws you out.
Well, I have a Kevlar kayak that I'm pretty sure that 90% of most people would not want to go in. It would flip you over in a heartbeat. If shooting left to right, you know, it's very dangerous to shoot out. Now, if you get on some hyacinths or something like that, it's not that bad. But yeah. But no, for your boat, for me, the versatility would be in the waterfowl hunting, because if I'm layout hunting in my typical layout boat, it's anchored and I can't go anywhere. I have to depend on someone in another boat to tend me. Whereas in, if I could go out and take your boat, right, and I could set my decoys where I wanted them, and then I could paddle back to my spot and leave my boat 100, 200 from myself, and I could have my hunt, kill my ducks, go pick my ducks up, and not have to worry about, you know, a swim off if I got a cripple, or I've got floaters in the wind, you know, I can get those birds. And not only that, is I've got a dog spot for a dog to be able to swim up on, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I mean, I just, that's the versatility that I'm looking at with that boat.
Dude, and then too, if you look at this thing from like top down perspective, it looks like, would it be correct to say it has a small shelf in the front as well?
We're trying to add a shelf in the front.
Oh, okay. I see. That was, it's where the front of the boat scoops up. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So we're trying to add an accessory. It's not released yet, but to keep cargo gear, whatever you guys want to call it, but out from being in the boat, just in case there is water in the boat. So that's where those scupper holes on the side are coming into play. Some kind of like netting compartment to keep your gear out of the water. Or not out of the water, out of the bottom of the boat, out of the boat, the hole.
Yeah, even then, if you got water in the bottom, it's got the little like runners to run the water, kind of, unless you manage to get just an absolute assload of water in the boat.
Yeah.
Oh, well, here's the thing, man. Like, if you are waterfowl hunting or accessing deer hunting via water access, you're going to get water in the boat.
Sure.
You cannot stop it. And not saying that you're going to, like, water's going to come over the side of the boat and get in, but you're going to get out. You're going to get water on yourself via either your rubber boots or if you're in waders, and waders would be far worse than rubber boots. But you're going to then proceed to get back into said boat, and you're going to be wet. Now, you may be able to kind of avoid that deer hunting, because I could see, like, you get out in shallow water, drag the boat up on shore. No, you're going to have to push it back in. So you're going to get water in the bottom of there.
Yeah. So
not a serious amount of water, but, yeah. But if you're in waders though, and you're like hopping out into waist deep, just over waist deep water, and you're going in and out of that boat, it's going to get wet.
Yeah.
There. Yeah. You're going to get enough. You're going to get enough water in there to ruin a cardboard box of shells. The cardboard box anyway.
Well, that was another question I had was, are you guys thinking about like, in the future for like accessories for the boat, like, you know, like as a layout hunter for myself, you know, where you've got some type of like a backing rail, you know, whether it's molded into the boat, where it's like you have a waterfowl series boat that's strictly, you know what I'm saying, where you've got like a ramp basically where you're laying down where you can lay against it that has a pad, you know, that you guys manufacture that you either snap in or Velcro in or something of that nature.
Yep, great question. March 19th, I have a meeting with our designers, product engineers, and they're going to offer so many more accessories, what we're going to roll out with. Nice. Yes, that is a big, big consideration. We're looking at two different seats. One for a more recreational fishing, so you're going to be a little more elevated in the boat.
Yeah, I like that.
That one's going to be more low profile down in the cockpit hole area, as you will.
Right.
So, yes, like a lot of things are about to roll out. Like, very blessed to have this partnership with. Right now, we offer a blind, like just it's literally like a fishing hand, thing, like a glove.
That thing hides it pretty well, too, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have a license deal partnership with Mossy Oak. So, yep, it's got the doors on top, so it's a layout blind.
The blind's even got a little pouch in the side of it, too.
Yep, we're looking. Yeah, right now it's got a pouch in it for your shells, whatever it may be, any gear calls. And, yeah, we're looking to. I don't want to speak too much before these releases. People start hounding you on what's coming.
I got you.
But, yeah, like gun racks, we're considering that too. Some easy clamp that clamps on the cockpit side, you know, so you just rest your gun and set it right there in your lap. But yeah, we got a lot of things cooking right now.
Cool.
I would think with the scupper holes, you could almost make a gun rack like they used to have. You put on the front of your four wheeler, just the two U's with a rubber strap on
top.
Yeah.
I got one of those on my side by side.
Yeah, man. those were great as long as it wasn't dry. Everything was gonna get covered in dust. But that's what I had them off. But my dad had the nice scabbard, SKB scabbard down the side of his, and he's like, yeah, this is yours. Two U's. on the front with a rubber glove. Like, okay, thanks, Seth.
Why is my gun always dirty?
Yeah. So it says your load capacity is 320 pounds. Not that it's recommended, but have you tried to overload it?
I personally have not, but I have a lot of pictures and videos of her awesome customers that have. Those guys up in Long Island, New York, they had three guys in the boat with an oversized motor just
in that boat? In your boat?
In the boat.
Oh, good yeah. God.
Wow. Goodness.
I know it. I would definitely not recommend that. I mean, you got to like balance out the weight, you know. But yeah, anything you have, you know, if you have a weight capacity, there's always some kind of safety net in there. But by the Coast Guard, yes, it is rated by 320 pounds. It went through a 3-day testing period by the Coast Guard.
I'm still stuck on three guys in that little boat because I put two guys in my 12-foot John boat, and I feel like we have to be like Circus Olay certified to be in that thing. Because, but of course, I'm sure yours is a lot more stable than a 12-foot John boat. Not that
I was going to say, man. So when I look at 320 pounds and I look at this boat, I'm like, I really want to know like what it takes to genuinely like have enough weight in that boat to swamp it, because it looks like you could just overload it and it would just never swamp. Like the shape of the boat looks like it would be extremely hard to swamp. Maybe not from waves, but from weight.
Well, I mean, eventually you overdo buoyancy, but no, I don't disagree with you at all.
Yeah.
Without the foam, by the Coast Guard testing, the boat withstood 1,160 pounds before it started taking in water.
Yeah, Jesus.
Okay, I would agree with that. And you give a 300-pound rating. That's fair.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I've seen some big old boys and waders.
Comp situation. That's weight.
Yeah.
Weight. You know.
Yeah.
That's all transfers. You know.
But I've seen some big old boys and waders, myself included. And I'm 250 pounds. I look at 320 pounds. I'm like, I can stack an extra 70 pounds of gear in there pretty easy.
I'm thinking 90 decoys, two guys, and a 25 on the back, and we'll be straight.
With the dog. Yeah.
Don't be all like tucked in the back. Equal out your weight a little bit.
That's right.
You look like the Clampets when they moved to California.
I know. You sit here, the decoys here.
Put some cinder blocks up in the front.
Yeah. I'll hook those tethers to the guns.
That's why the waterfowl guys, they love this boat because how lightweight it is. And think about all your decoys. Those are bulky items, too. They're lightweight, but...
Right. They just take up room.
Yeah, they take up room. That's why we widen out the cockpit, made more room for, like, you can go out there and just make one trip, not making two or three trips.
Exactly.
It's even got some wheels for it, too, so you can tote it around on wheels.
Yep, those are a big hit right now. We can't keep those in stock either. Like, we're going to a major manufacturer to ramp those up too now.
What's the miles per hour rating on those wheels? No, I'm just kidding.
No, but really, though, because you think about like the...
I mean, is it like a trailer? You know?
But you think about the... You say that, right? But
he's got it behind a four-wheeler
here. As soon as he said wheels, my first thought was the guys on e-bikes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I can think of a couple... wildlife management areas near us where like you could use an e-bike to get to a spot on a river where you can't, it's a long walk, be a long carry. So if you drug it behind an e-bike and then put it in, you could get really deep.
Oh, that's a fact.
I'm telling you, your specific WMate that you want bad this year.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
You could put a hurt, dude.
Oh, I know.
You could get to some dangerous spots with that boat.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And
it's only $1,200.
Yeah. Yeah.
About to sell one.
I mean, honestly, as much as this boat, like with the capabilities of this boat and the weight and the size, like $1,200 is extremely reasonable.
Is there a bank account that I could just switch my direct deposit to next week, or at least part of it, so that it comes in there, and then I can explain to my wife. I can buy
kind of like weeks. A layaway system.
Well, no, I mean like, but I can buy 2 weeks. But baby, I don't know what happened to that. Why my paycheck is so small this week? Like, and then 2 weeks later, we struggle for a little bit, and they're like, no, they gave me the boat. I didn't buy it. See, it's not coming out of our bank account.
Scoundrel.
She'd kill me.
Go back to the wheel kit, though. It's just well designed again, how like the poles, you know, above the wheels, it goes right there in the scupper holes. And a lot of our customers flip that wheel kit upside down, and there's a bar, and they use it for a seat, too. Now you're elevated. Oh, yeah. You're like right at the cockpit, but yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I see that. Pulling it up on the bank there with the dang. That's sweet. I mean, realistically, you could just flip the boat over at that point, too, and pull it upside down. You wouldn't even have to.
Yeah.
That is sweet, man. Dude's hauling butt on that four-wheeler, too, so these things got to have a decent speed rating.
Oh, yeah.
They'll run till the wheels fall off. But I bet when they do, by the time you realize that roto-motive bolt, that boat can handle it.
You could probably just drag the boat without the wheels.
I wouldn't suggest it. No, I don't think Jeff would either.
I mean, in my young days, when we would change the polymer on the airboat, we would drag each other around on that. And that's not, I bet it's not as thick as that.
Yeah, probably not. Oh.
The possibilities are endless.
You could put a shop fan on the back of that boat and get her going good.
Oh, bro. Awesome. And water feather airboat.
Yeah, just like, you know, like the big shop fans you can buy at Harbor Freight. Yeah. You just got to figure out a way to power it.
A Harbor Freight motor.
A 35 Vanguard.
Yeah. Well, then you lost the weight aspect of being able just to run a fan.
Sit in the front.
No, here you go. No, look, you get one of the, when you're at Harbor Freight, you buy one of those tiny little Honda-esque generators that weighs nothing. That's just enough to power that electric fan.
That's right.
Rig that up in the back. Now you're going. Blow boat, man.
Yeah, man.
Not an airboat, but a fan boat. There's a difference in the two.
Yeah. What Dan call it? Wind boat.
A wind boat. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Man, he's from Virginia, man. And that guy was like, you guys got those, what are they, like the wind boats? It's like, you mean like a sailboat? He's like, no, man, the ones with the big propeller on the back. It's like an airboat. Yeah.
His mind was in the right place.
Yeah.
You guys have those down in Florida?
Airboats?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
dude.
Hey,
yeah.
Any weekend you want to go on a lake, you'll hear an airboat.
Not just any air, dude. You got guys that are
these guys down here got 70, 80, even $100,000 airboats.
Dude, I've done as much as like 80 something miles an hour in an airboat.
I've been over 100 miles an hour in an airboat.
Yeah,
I've never even seen one. When I see one, I think of the Water Boy.
Oh, yeah. Hey, find the time to come down to the Mudbug Bash. You'll have a kid, but find the time to come down to the Mudbug Bash next year. And there's quite a few guys that join it in airboats.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Hey, maybe next year I come down there and turkey hunt and go to your guys' bash.
Perfect.
Hey,
there you go.
Yeah,
perfect.
Get you an Osceola while you're at it.
Yeah, it's on my bucket list.
So you turkey hunter too?
Oh, yeah. I try to.
I mean, I'm a turkey hunter. Everywhere. Terrible turkey killer, but I'm a turkey hunter. So you water access turkeys?
No, not really. No, I guess I could, but no. There's so many turkeys here and where I'm at. That's
actually kind of a big thing here with like a submerged sovereign like we have.
Well, here's the thing too, though. Hand in hand, turkeys and water go pretty well hand in hand here. A lot of turkeys tend to roost over water in Cypress Heads. Not saying you're going to pull up and they're roosted on the bank of the river, but being in a low-lying area with water in it is not a bad place to start finding turkeys. It's, we don't have a massive amount of agriculture here where they're going to be out in fields and picking beans that are, or anything that's been left over from the fall or late winter, you know, with wheat and stuff like that. So you I don't know that I've ever seen wheat grown down here.
It's river hunting here and looking at people's St. Augustine front yards.
100%.
We have a lot.
There's wheat everywhere.
I've seen more big gobblers fighting their reflection in the side of a black car than I have fighting another turkey.
That's a fact. Yeah, you take good care of your BMW, you're going to have a turkey strut beside it.
Tearing it up, man. Just tearing it up. So who's got these boats in their hands already? Well, we talked about it a little bit on our break, but...
Yeah, I got to be careful with who's trying out the boats and stuff. But usually anybody gets a boat in their hands, they love the boat because how light, they can't believe how heavy it is, or heavy, how lightweight it is. They always think it's a lot heavier. But we're at the National Wild Turkey Federation convention in Nashville, Tennessee, a couple weeks back. You know, Bruce Mitchell from the Swamp People, he's got a boat and he loves it.
Nice.
Is he gator hunting out of it? Well, I would hope not. I mean, he's commercially gator hunting, too, so he's got to pack a lot of gators in that. But he's going to meet that 1,000-pound restriction. Of course, no, if you watch History Channel, though, that's one gator. 1,000. Yeah. That's a 2,000-pound, 8-foot. I'm like, nah, no, it's not. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I told Bruce Mitchell, like, hey, I just want to see a gator or a python out of that boat. You know, come on, Bruce. Hey, but, yeah, right when he got home, he does a lot of Facebook Live stuff. Even when he got home, he was so ecstatic about this boat. That's what's the greatest thing about this boat is, like, everybody's so happy and wants to tell you about the ventures and what they're going to do, you know? Home, he's like, oh, check out this boat. You know, I'm going to do this, going to do that. Look how lightweight it is. It's awesome. It's stable. Look, guys, like Bruce Mitchell, I mean, he ain't saying he's old, but he's not young either, you know, but he's standing there holding it with one hand, you know, like, look, I can hold this boat with one hand.
It's easy to look at that, and the way it's designed, it is so, it's very utilitarian. It's not designed, like, I think, like, you look at, like, a UFO layout boat, you're not paddling it.
No, you're absolutely not.
All you're doing out of that is laying in it and hunting ducks. That's it. You're done. You're not taking it deer hunting. That's it. Done. Laying in the water, hunting ducks out of it.
I mean, you could have a square dance in it, but
you're right.
But you ain't paddling that thing anywhere.
Right. I mean, you literally.
How heavy is that boat?
A UFO?
Heavy enough that it takes two people to get it back in my
Google
boat.
It. The UFO layout boat.
Yeah, and it's probably it's got to be close to 300.
Okay.
Lord have mercy, really?
It's heavy. It's really heavy.
I mean, they're fairly large. A big oval.
I can move it around by myself, but I have to drag it. Like, I literally have to pick it up and drag it. I can't.
450 pounds.
Yes. God. Oh, wait.
The weight of the boat is 135 pounds with a maximum capacity of 450. So, dude, he's only like 100 pounds over a water feather and triple the weight. Like, it weighs three times as much as a water feather, and it only handles 100 pounds more.
Right.
That's not worth it.
No.
And what?
Well, it's a complete different. You're not using this as a sneak boat.
No.
You know, a water feather is going to be a sneak boat, you know, but you could also use it in the same purpose, right? That UFO, that's strictly single purpose boat.
And the thing, too, man, I want to wrap around back to waterfowl hunting here in Florida. You've got a lot of places here where there's a dike system, right? And actually, I can think of quite a few in, like, South Georgia as well, where you can take a water – you're not taking a UFO and dragging it over a dike and dropping it in the neck. But that water feather boat, put it in, paddle across, up that dike, down the other side. Paddle across, up one dike, down the other side. And now you've gotten a lot further than you're going to get in a canoe or a John boat or anything else. And you're getting into areas where people in their 17 or 18 foot boat with a 35 or a 40 surface drive, they're not going to get there.
Right.
And so you're going to be able to seclude yourself from even in the zoo, you could find a hiding spot.
Yep.
And if you're a duck hunter in Florida, I know I didn't name it by name, but I spot named a specific spot in Florida. And it's the duck hunting there is not, it's Emerald Marsh, man. It's not a secret. It's not bad, but it's also extremely overcrowded.
There's a few people that duck hunt in there.
Yeah, a few. A few that you know, or just a few in general. Yeah.
So Jeff, just to put it in perspective, this spot that they just talked about, if the hunt opens on Saturday, the line to start getting in there
starts on Wednesday.
Yeah, starts on Wednesday. Or, I mean, people camp out.
I don't like,
every
think,
weekend just to hunt there.
I don't think it's sit there on Wednesday good.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not.
But
especially
still
when I pull
do
in
it
around Saturday morning at 5:30, and I'm the first one to leave. there's tricks and tactics still.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean that's all. It's the same with deer, man. It's boots on the ground. It's time on the water. It's finding the birds. It's because you can be there 20 days in advance and still not know where the birds are if you're not in the right spot. It all boils down to, like, man, if you're not where the birds want to be or where the deer are, you're not going to see deer. You're not going to see birds. It's just not going to happen.
So I kind of want to double back here. I just thought about something. You were talking about who they're in the hands of, and I know, like, one YouTube that I watch quite a bit is DO3, which is Jacob Emery. And
no kidding.
Yeah, I was going to say, he actually, I pulled up my phone a second ago and opened Facebook, and it was just right there on the mobile hunters. He had a picture of it in the, it looks like it has a Toyota Tacoma. It's in the bed of it with an e-bike inside of it and a bunch more stuff also packed inside the boat. So I'm like, dude, that's nifty. You pack that just right there in the bed of your mid-sized truck.
Here I am
truck.
Thinking, e-bike hauls the boat, and he's over here hauling the e-bike with a boat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought about that when you were talking about the e-bike. I'm thinking
you're doing it in reverse.
E-bike in it, and then you get across whatever creek, river you're hunting, and then now you can e-bike a little farther to where you need to go.
That's the next level.
Mm-hmm.
God dang. I'm going to have to start to stick it. You guys got, like, what's that, the Afterpay, the like, so much a month I can buy it off your website?
Sure.
Klarna. I only know it's there because it's on our website. People, I'm like, dude, we talk about the Swanee trip being $160. I'm like, yeah, just hit it with the Afterpay or whatever. Pay $20 or $30 a month until it's paid off. I get the money right away. Like, you do what you got to do.
Do we have that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Part of Shopify or whatever.
Going back to DO3, he actually reached out to us, and I talked to him and stuff, and I don't get involved in all the discussions, because like, we have people nonstop hitting us up now because the brand's really taken off the boats, and I personally went and met and delivered Jacob's boat with him. And Jacob is DO3. And
yeah.
What I didn't know what DO3 stood for, which I love, because is dad of three. So I'm about to be a dad of three, DO3. So I don't know. I thought it was really cool. That guy is so down to earth. That dude, he is awesome. He is on a mission.
Yeah.
Loves outdoors. Great dad. Hard blue collar dude. I mean, living his dream, you know.
I was gonna say, he just puts out some really quality content too. I mean, it's all easy to watch, like you said. He's just a real genuine guy. I actually told William the other day, I want to have him on because he is I know he's written some articles about water access and stuff like that. So I have him on to talk about some water access.
You talk about DO3, but you hunt with a team as well.
I do, yes. I'm blessed to be hunting with Whitetail Edge.
Yep.
The owner, Ben Rising, hunted, I believe, 11 years with Drury Outdoors. So, yeah, Ben's really helped me out in so many different aspects, you know, with, like, teach me how to become a better deer hunter and and just everybody within the team, they're such high quality individuals, you know, like they're believers of Jesus Christ, you know, so it's faith driven, just helps me become a better person, hunter, just all around. So just the team's awesome. Everybody just feels like, you know, I don't really know them that well. I feel like I know them very well, you know, because they're so genuine, you know. It's just, yeah, but Whitetail Edge is a big buck group, killing group. Especially so, Ben Rising.
How did you get involved with that?
That's a great question. God has a plan for everything, and I was actually at the Indiana Deer Turkey Waterfowl Expo, just buying a lot of different product, just trying to chase my dream too, you know. And before, nobody, not too many people know this, but I got a separate company that I built from scratch and built it up and finally started buying property and properties and started developing. And when you're developing products and you have, I don't know, you have opportunities there of big buck, killing big bucks or just footage. And long story short, just they reached out to me and asked me if I was wanting to be part on the team, and I'm just very blessed, really.
Yeah,
absolutely. I hate to say that I'm lucky. I just very blessed. I feel like God works in, I don't know, magical ways, you know, and just kind of, I don't know, I just kind of just happened. Really,
everything falls into place for a reason.
That's a fact.
Absolutely, yeah.
So yep.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say I've just been working my tail off of building my first initial company to get to where I'm at and buying properties and stuff. And then I think that there was opportunity there for Whitetail Edge of how I was about to do a lot of like property development, you know, some good footage, good content that I could produce for their show and everything. And I mean, there's a lot of pressure, you know, people are like, oh, it's cool if you film this and that, but I guess it is, but man, it's a lot of like pressure on you, you know, and like you're doing all this work and you got to produce, you know?
So are you buying property specifically to develop into hunting property?
I am, yes.
Because you say develop property here, and everybody from Florida thinks we're about to see houses.
No. That's just being outdoors is my passion. You know, like I always wanted to own my own land. Like, who does not want to?
100%, yeah.
And that was my dream of why I started my own company for Waterfeather. And I'm very proud to say I'm living my dream. I just built my house on my property in north end of my property. This is my vision 8 years ago why I started my own company before Waterfeather.
It's one of those things coming from a guy who grew up I was very fortunate to be raised hunting this way. I grew up hunting leased property. I didn't start hunting public land until I was a teenager, and that was hunting with buddies here local, because we have the Ocala National Forest is 20 minutes from where we're recording right now, and I grew up hunting there as a teenager bow hunting because, dude, like, yeah, man, I'm 18 years old, graduated high school, I'm working on a Tuesday, I get off at noon, let's hit the woods this afternoon and let's go bow hunt. So that's what we did, and that's where I got my first taste of public land. Which on a Tuesday is not a real true taste of public land. Like, nobody's there. It's Tuesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Everybody's at work.
Yeah. And if you're doing that kind of hunting in the Ocala National Forest too, that could all like easily put a little bit of a bitter taste in your mouth.
For what?
If you're not scouting, I mean, if you're just going out and.
Dude, I saw more deer and on Tuesday afternoons at 2 o'clock. I fought with Clint. Because Clint was not like, we're not going to the woods until 4:30. I'm like, no, man, let's go out right now. I'm off at noon. You're not working today. We're going at 1 o'clock. That afternoon, we went at 1 o'clock. I saw like 25 deer. Like, I told you. Like, we bumped deer walking into the tree stands. Like, I told you we need to be here now. And then, but I didn't really get a taste for hunting public land until I joined the Army. And then I left home, and I left the ability to have the access of a lease, to have access to a lease within, I don't know, 3-4 hours from the house up in South Georgia. So at that time, the lease was like 9.5 hours away. And I was like, I'm not driving that far, and I'm not paying $300 for an out-of-state license to drive 9.5 hours. So I said, you know what? I'll hunt the base. Well, you go and hunt the base. And man, that is, it's not the truest form of public land, but there's a lot of dudes out there. I mean, I've been, yeah. I've had people, I mean, I feel like the guy was mad that I was where I was parked when he shot through the woods, but I know he shot across the cornfield after close to where I parked my truck. I've had bullets go underneath me. I've had people walk in, and this hot tip, one of the things I learned that turns people around way faster than a flash than a flashlight is a laser pointer. You can hit people from a long ways off with a good laser pointer.
That's a fact.
And when you point, like, it's not like, hey, here's a flashlight in the tree. I'm like, hey, green dot on your chest. And at 200 yards, I mean, it's like a foot wide. They're like, hey, bud. And they turn and walk away. I'm not pointing a gun at you. You may think that, but I have a laser pointer in my hand, and I'm like, dude, I'm over here. But
did you keep that laser pointer when you're a kid or what?
Say what?
I haven't seen a laser pointer since I was a kid.
I was going to say, so I actually have at the house, now I think I need to carry it more often. I have a laser genetics laser.
Yeah.
That thing's tits. I don't know if you've ever heard of those, but it, like, back in the day, it was a hot thing, like before you, like,
before thermal scopes became
readily available.
Commercially available. Yeah.
So the one you sighted in with your scope.
Yeah. Well, it's like a, dude, that when I got it, that laser genetics laser was like $400. But it shines a beam. It says that it shines huntable light out to 300 yards. And you can focus it. And then unfocus it. Dude, it's nasty.
Yeah, that's dude. Awesome. Hot tip. And I don't mean like your regular laser pointer that runs on like the little tiny batteries. You got to get one that runs on like 2 AAAs. Right. Like a good laser pointer you can reach out to 200-300 yards with. And when you do that, people are like, oh, I'm good, man. I'll turn around.
At that point, do you play with deer with it too?
I did.
Yeah?
I did. And they can see it. They don't chase it like raccoons do, but they can see it. A green laser, they can totally see it. Because I've shined it where they're eating, and they're like, they stop and look at it. And you move around, they keep watching it. But they don't pay. Do you get a raccoon, though? Raccoon will chase it.
Like a cat, huh?
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah. But, yeah, hot tip, public land hunters, laser pointer. Keep people out of your spot. But hunting there, you've got people coming on you at all times of the day, man. Like, you're there at 9 o'clock in the morning, some dude rolls up walking down the road. I'm like, dude. Or you're on a road, you're not supposed to be driving down. Here comes a truck.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, man, you literally drove past my truck, parked next to, like, across the street from the do not drive beyond this point sign.
Yep.
And you came this far back.
Welcome to Florida.
It ain't just Florida, man. That was in Tennessee.
I would say, listen, I had an instance like that this year where I was on a local WMA, and I told one of my buddies, like, I want to go back to this spot here. I think I want to hunt back in here. So we drive down this road, and we pass this guy in a Jeep, and I'm like, man, I don't know why he's sitting there. Get way back in this road, and the guy pulls up, and he's like, man, I didn't think you could drive back here. And I was like, I never drove past a sign that said I couldn't drive, but there was no sign at all that says no driving beyond this point. I had to get back there, and we're getting, you know, putting our saddles on and stuff, and here comes like 5 e-bikes past us, and I'm like, okay. So that's kind of weird. Like, why are they not driving back here? We finish the hunt out, and I drive back out, and there's two, like, you know, like your marker post things that you have, like the little small fiberglass poles.
Yeah.
There's two small fiberglass poles with put just far enough to where you can fit a truck between them with no driving signs stuck right in the middle of the road. And I'm like, ah, so there was supposed to be a sign here. Not anymore.
Yep.
But
That happens all too often.
When I dove into public land, like, that was, it was always walk as far as I could. I mean, one of the biggest deer I've killed, I killed a 13 point on Fort Campbell, and I walked 2.5 miles to kill that deer. And we drug it back. All, it was 236 pounds dressed. Wow. Drug it back with the guts in. 2 miles back. Because there was a half mile of gravel road that we weren't supposed to drive down. And we hit that gravel road, and I said, I rolled my ankle. My buddy goes, you all right? I was like, no, it's really bad. You need to go get the truck. Here's my keys. He's like, you serious? I was like, no, I'm not serious. That's what I'm telling the game warden. If you get caught, go get my truck. I'm not dragging this deer a foot farther.
Oh, heck.
It's a gravel road, man. I'm not dragging this deer any further than we already are.
Like, I was going to say, at that point, he probably didn't have any hair on one side of him.
No, he didn't. It was bad. I killed that deer at 3 in the afternoon, and we didn't get it checked in till 7:45.
Wow.
It took us like 2.5-3 hours to drag that deer out. It was brutal.
Yeah,
there were three of us.
2.5 miles in Kentucky is...
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yeah. And I killed him deep in a river bottom. I'll say it's just a bottom, not a river bottom, but it had a seasonal creek in it. But no, and that was a long drag. And when I hunted that spot, I knew that it was going to be brutal. And I said, I am not killing a deer back here unless it's worth dragging 2.5 miles back to the truck. But
so no spikes, huh?
No, no.
So if we're talking kind of hunting stories here, Jeff, I want to know, you know, if you're hunting for whitetail edge, what, over your career of hunting so far, what has been your most memorable hunt?
I don't think it's got to be from whitetail edge either. It can be when you're 7 years old.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, yeah.
Just honestly, probably the buck I just killed off my property, my first buck off the property I just got. Just meant a lot to me. Just bought the property. Always been a dream of mine, you know. And killed first buck, which was a Booner. Ended up scoring 179 and an eighth.
Goodness.
Yeah, and named him KIA. Killed in action because I started chasing that buck on November 2nd, 2023. But on back in November 2nd, 2006, my high school buddy, that reason why I joined the Marine Corps, was killed in action that same date back in 2006 in Iraq. So there's a lot that went with it. With named KIA, first buck of the property, first Booner on the property. I don't know, and didn't come easy either. I mean, I saw him on November 2nd and ended up killing him November 9th, and on November 2nd, why? Because I film all my hunts. That was my 24th sit that time of the year. So, man, I was already bumping and grinding. I felt like already too long in Indiana. So, I don't know. It just meant a lot to me of killing my first Booner on the property, first buck on the property, named KIA. Marine Corps means a lot to me, and all of my buddies. So, I had to say that.
That's serious deer, too. I mean, goodness gracious. You said 179?
Yeah, he's a 6x8. Yeah.
God. Stud. I killed 104 inch this year, and I was proud of it.
Well, that's a really good deer in Florida.
Yeah. Speaking of Florida, doesn't your season open up like July 15th?
South Florida. July, like, 29th, I think.
So
it'll be like the last Saturday in July.
The deer down around Lake Okeechobee right now are already like in serious velvet. Like,
yeah, they're growing velvet.
Like back. full rack velvet.
No, they won't be full rack yet. No, they're starting to grow. Nope. I lived down there for some time, and those deer start growing back. They'll have knots right now because they lost their antlers back at the end of Christmas.
Yeah. The season opens in July and closes, I could look back and look what it closed last year. I wrote it down.
January 7th?
Give me just a second. I'm going to flip my notes back.
I don't say why he's looking at his notes here in Indiana, the Midwest. I still have cameras everywhere, and they're still holding their antlers. Not still. Like, there's few bucks still holding, but today was my actually first day going shed hunting.
I found 5 scrapes this past weekend.
Wow.
Yeah, they're
still fresh scrapes?
Yeah, they're still rutting right now.
So let me give you an idea of what you're looking at here. In Zone A, which is like the north side of Highlands and DeSoto, or right around the north side of Lake Okeechobee, that opened last year in 2023 on July 29th and closed January 7th of 2024. And then Zone D, which is the Northwest Panhandle, opened October 21st and closed February 25th. But you know what also happened on February 25th? There was youth turkey season back down in South Florida that same day. February 24th was when youth turkey opened. And then the 25th, that 24th, 25th weekend was youth turkey south of 70. And then last weekend was youth turkey here. And this weekend is the opener for spring turkey.
Yeah.
You can hunt. I mean, there's almost not a month without hunting until you got May and June.
Yeah.
But even then, you could still hunt rabbits, hogs, squirrels, and coyotes.
Iguanas.
Oh, yeah, those are fun.
But that's awesome. Like, honestly, the people from, like, Midwest, you know, this whole area, they think of Florida, the beach. Nobody ever thinks all the hunting you guys do down in Florida.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, and I was like, you know, one thing that probably almost 100% of people that aren't from Florida don't know is that, like, back in the day, Florida was the number one cattle state.
That's awesome, yeah. Interesting.
Now we're a giant retirement community.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's a good-sized buck down in Florida?
It depends where you're at.
Our registry starts at 100 inches.
Because we have a big deer gene in South Florida. There's a belt down there that you can shoot 180-pound deer down there.
No kidding.
Yeah, but you also have a lot more agriculture down there.
150-inch bucks down there, too. 160s.
Yeah, you, so
it's freaks.
You hit these down there. But the same thing happens in Northwest Florida, where you get into, like, the Floribama area. Where you run into a lot more agriculture in both of those places. South Lake Okeechobee, north of northwest of, like, Tallahassee area there, you run into a lot more agriculture. It's a lot more rural Florida. The central part of Florida, even south of Gainesville, so many houses and stuff. I mean, you can still get good deer down here. The Florida state record was killed in that area at 206 inches.
Right.
And then just last year, Luke Ashby killed that 200-inch?
Right at 200.
200-inch buck? But I don't know. I would say an average good deer here in Florida, 110, 120 inches. Like, that's a monster on average for Florida.
Yep.
Yeah, I think
that's... honestly don't know.
With your average...
I don't know much about Florida deer hunting, but I want to go.
It's tough.
Who wants to come to Indiana and I'll go to Florida?
Let's do it.
Right. Yeah. We'll swap.
Florida, man, it is a really, like, you want to talk about having to grind to kill a good deer.
Everything you have to do here. Duck hunting, you have to grind. Turkey hunting, you have to grind. Deer hunting, you have to grind. If you're not on your grind here, you're not going to be successful.
Like, it's extremely possible, but you just really have to grind. I mean, scout.
Oh, it's a lot of hunting. And it's not only hunting. It's not only hunting. Because if you're a public land guy here, I'm hunting you. I'm hunting him. I'm doing more people hunting than I am actual animal hunting. I've already found a good turkey or I've found a good deer. How many other people know about this thing? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's not like, oh, there's this one other guy. No, because he's at the bar telling his buddy, and he's at the bar telling his, and before you know it, because everybody wants to tell a good deer story, and everybody wants to tell a good turkey story, you know, or, oh, I know where all the ducks live, you know, and that's what we have to contend with on a constant, and that's what makes it the toughest.
Yep, I love the grind, you know, like, a lot of people think of, like, the kill is the hunt, which it is, you know, but, man, it's the
icing.
It's the pursuit, yeah.
I was going to say, I know you being a military man, you can very well, and me and William say this all the time, the best part of the hunting we do is when you get to embrace the suck.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. I feel like the kill is like the tip of the iceberg. Yeah, you get to embrace the suck.
Yeah, that's
right. You guys talking about you guys bump and grind to get where you're doing, for you to be successful, that's what it's about, you know? It's, to me, like, people are like, why do you go through, like, why do you make it harder on yourself? Why do you just take a bow and start rifle season? I don't know. I guess I like the challenge of like I don't know. It's embracing the suck, you know, bumping your grind.
That's a fact.
Absolutely. Another thing that makes it a little bit harder here in Florida is a lot of our WMAs are a quota system. So I could scout a deer and know that he's in this certain WMA, but if I don't draw that WMA, I don't get to hunt it.
Man.
Yep.
So it's pretty much what you got to do here is put in for your quotas, and all of our quotas are based on a point system. So some of them you can kind of save up your points and then know that you're going to get this WMA, but I've never bothered to go that far. I just put in for the ones I want, and if I get it, then I scout that WMA and I'll find that deer.
Yeah, so we got to roll the dice, and then once we did real good, then we have to roll the dice again. And then every morning you got to re-roll the dice again.
I don't want to keep you too long, man. I know you're like literally. I know you got a backpack back there somewhere for a baby.
Yeah, we got a little baby Ruby. We'll be here on Friday.
Very good. So by the time you guys are hearing this, you're a new dad for the third time.
Yep.
Congratulations. Like
Of three over here. Yeah.
We'll be praying for you guys.
Congrats, man.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've got one, and right there, we're done. I've got a boy and a girl, and then, yep, no, we're done with that.
had the girl and said, no.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, your son's like the well-mannered, really just great kid, and then his daughter's a hellion.
I can't let her outside because I'm like, no, you can't go outside. You're naked. You can't just go outside in underwear. Like, you need to put clothes on.
That's funny you told her that again tonight.
Yeah, no. She's trying to come out the door. I said, no, you can't come out of the porch. You're naked.
What's awesome, having my kids, though, like with the Waterfowler boats, we go to so many different shows now. Like, I cannot wait till the show. I get to take my kids to my shows. I have them in waders, you know, and like deer hunt outfits, whatever, you know, like showing, you know, like, I don't know, have my kids part of what we have this boat, you know, have them grow up in the hunting industry too. Like, we're out putting Minter out yesterday. My girls, we just moved to our new house. So literally we moved in our new house. We built a home, moved in Friday, and we're having our third daughter this coming Friday. So we got a lot of things going on. But long story short, I'm just glad we built our house on our dream land where all my big farms that where I hunt all the deer, waterfowl, everything, turkeys. Grow my kids, my three daughters on the property, show them like enjoying God's creation, like hunting deer, turkey, waterfowl, going to shows. I don't know. This.
Yeah, man.
You guys are the same stuff, way. Like, same value. Yeah. Yeah. Just what's about.
That's it, man.
I've had my son hunting with me since he was about three, on and off since he was three. And then this year at seven, he killed his first two deer, youth weekend in Alabama. And I took my daughter out hunting for the first time this year at 4 years old. Took her squirrel hunting, and that was interesting. My son is just ate up with hunting and being in the outdoors. I mean, the kid loves two things on his own admission. It's baseball and hunting. When he started spring baseball, the coach said, what do you guys like to do besides play baseball? He's like, I like to hunt. What else? He's like, that's it. Mm-hmm. Baseball and hunt. I'm like, hey, man, let's go for it. And, you know, it's funny. My son, you talk about raising kids in the outdoor industry. My son said to me the other night, he's like, maybe one day I'll have my own podcast. I was like, maybe one day you'll have my podcast.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I feel like hunting, enjoying outdoors is the best mental therapy a person can experience. You know, like your mind is clears.
You know, and that's why, that right there is why we have supported Tin Can through the crawfish boil, because that's their outlet for veterans and first responders with PTSD, is to take them out and they hunt. And the crawfish boil sponsors their gator hunt. And I think last year they had 230 or something veterans they took on gator hunts across the state of Florida, veterans and first responders. And they do so much more than just the hunts. They take the families places and stuff like that. And they're a great organization. Nobody makes a dime. Everything goes back to veterans and first responders. And it's just, it's great. And it's great to be able to host an event to raise. Last year we raised right about $30,000 for them with the crawfish boil. And we're hoping to do that again this year, if not more.
That's what I'm talking about.
We do that with the veterans for the duck hunts.
Yeah.
And for the, you know, for the youth, for the Tin Can too.
Yeah.
You know, I was part of both of that 2 years in a row now.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, man. And I did, not to mention at that crawfish bowl, it's not just like you can win prizes. The poker run is a cash prize. I think the guy last year, we take $2,100 bucks.
Something like, yeah, I think 2,100.
First place did. And don't think you got to have a mud boat. That guy won that, was in a flats boat.
He's in a Sabine skiff.
Nice. Yeah. You'd be hard-pressed to paddle a water feather boat to do it, but you could try.
You'd have to have various boats, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying, and you can try, but we're probably not going to wait on you to draw cards. I'm sorry. Because it's a several-mile trip around that whole, I think this year it's going to be like 7 card stops.
Yeah.
We have 7 stops, 5 card stops, and 2 raffle stops. So the people in the poker run can actually just draw raffle tickets for things that only the people in the poker run can win.
Nice.
And there'll probably actually maybe even be a gun that only people in the poker run can win. So.
So tell me what you guys are doing with the water feather boat.
So the water feather boat is going to go up in one of our raffle prizes at the crawfish boil.
Awesome.
Amongst a bunch of other things. I mean, we've got some hunts. We've got fishing trips. I've got a turtle box speaker sitting back here. I've got several firearms, ARs and shotguns and whatever else to go up there to be given away. And that's a lot of what generates money, especially this year with the price of crawfish being ridiculously high. I mean, right now we're looking at more than double what we paid last year for it with the drought in Louisiana. Because we do pride ourselves on the fact that we're not buying frozen crawfish. We are driving our sorry behinds all the way up to Louisiana, picking up. Last year we brought 1,800 pounds of crawfish back down here and cooked it all up for everybody. So it's an all-you-can-eat event. You guys come out and show up and eat as much crawfish as you can until you get tired, not full. Unless you're that type of a person who can actually sit there and shuck crawfish to get full. Not me. But it's a good time. It's a good social event. You meet a lot of people you didn't know, and you get to meet a lot of hunters and outdoorsmen and women. It's a very family-friendly event, and it's hosted by a local restaurant. Well, we host it on a property of a local restaurant who's kind enough to just lend us their space for free. And it's right on the river. So
everything just like, great thing, nonprofit, right, for veteran organization.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's what I'm talking about right there. Yeah. Hey, next year I'm being serious. Like when you talk about veteran stuff, like how I could help out. That's I'm a Marine combat veteran in Afghanistan. You know, like that's, I'm very involved in the Legion, the VFWs and stuff. But anyways, next year let's make something happen. Like I want to come down there. If I bring my wife, my kids, let's go on a turkey hunt. Let's go to this bash.
We can make it happen. Definitely think we can. I mean, we sold tables. We have tables available this year. I think our gold table, you can choose between like a Browning Wicked Wing shotgun.
A Hell's Canyon.
The Browning Hell's Canyon XR rifle or a Sig Sauer Legion 10mm with your gold table. Your silver table comes with a Henry Big Boy 44, a CZ Bob White in 12/20 or 28 gauge, or a Sig Sauer P365 macro, And then your bronze table comes with a 100 quart eco cooler.
Nice.
And then we sold whole sponsors to just sponsor the different stops where you get advertisement for your company and stuff like that there. And all that money goes. Yeah, I mean, we're doing everything we can to raise as much money for the charity. It's all about raising money for Tin Can. Mm-hmm. And then there's individual ticket sales, obviously. I think they're $45 for the crawfish bowl, and the same price for the poker run. I think you get a combo ticket of the two for $80. So you save a little money by buying a combo ticket if you're going to do both. And then if you pre-register for the poker run, you get a free annual subscription to Spartan Forge.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, it's a lot of planning that goes into it. I mean, we started back in December, I think, trying to plan this, and we had it all the years prior to this when we had it in May. This year we moved it up to April to deconflict with another event that we held on the same day as last year in order not to draw people away from them. Last year we had a little over 300 people in attendance. And 127
people,
121 people in the poker run.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly large event for the area.
I like it. that's unbelievable, really. Mark me down next year. I'm coming.
All right, we'll be in contact with you. We'll let you know.
Oh, probably a little sidetracked, but remind me. I'm serious. I want to go down there.
Yeah, we'll get you. Yeah, you can buy a table, and we'll get you a nice gun, and then you can come down here and turkey hunt and take some guns home with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could probably work out a good turkey hunt. I know a few outfitters.
Absolutely.
There we go. Yeah, if I come down, not if, when I come down there, I won't bring one boat. I might bring a couple of boats.
There you go. And it's on the water, so you could actually do a demo if people wanted to try them out local right there. Literally, you're 50 feet from the water where the tent is. It's a steep 50 feet, but you're 50 feet from the water. Out of the back of the tent. Any closing thoughts? What do you got left? What do you miss about water feather boats?
No, I just appreciate you guys like having me on everything. Very blessed to... where the water feather boats is really going, you know, like I'm glad we have a great product that we can like take people to the next level, you know, the next pursuit. And, man, just appreciate you guys having me on.
Do you have dealers all over the U.S.? Like if you're in a state that, do you have states that don't have dealers? And if so, how can people get your boats?
Yeah. So we have, boats available online, our website, Water Feathers, and we do have dealers spread out in multiple states. We're always looking for more dealers, but down in Florida, nearest dealer is Fort Lauderdale, Chris Molinette, awesome gentleman. But yeah, we're just looking for more dealers, and they can find us online. But thing is, these boats are a lot like bigger, like bulk package, so it's like about 4 foot wide, 9 foot long. So the shipping is outrageous. So we're trying to find dealers
in different areas. We're trying to get Sid with Fast Duck Motors to be a dealer with you up there in Astor.
We can work with him because when we make Florida trips, we just deliver more boats.
Yeah,
we are looking to have a warehouse. We're looking to have a distribution warehouse in Fort Lauderdale because there's so many boats going there. Looking to partner with Warehouse Service Incorporated. They have warehouses in so many different states. I'd say at least half the states across the country because these boats are going so fast. We need to stage them up so we can put them in more hands.
And we missed your website there. You kind of broke up a little bit, but I will post all that plus your social media down in the podcast description so that people don't actually have to go and search for it. They can scroll down into the podcast description and find that there so they can jump on there and look at your products and hopefully see him in action.
Perfect. Yep, much appreciated.
You guys got any closing thoughts?
Man, I need one of these boats.
You know the easiest place to get one of these boats?
Crawfish bowl.
Yeah, come there and try and win one.
Yeah.
We're going to have one.
I think it'll be there.
You can put hands on it, and then you can try and win it.
I'll try to make it.
Yeah, me too. Right. I'll have to be there.
Oh, I do have one more quick thing. We are going to be two Florida Expos this year. We just signed up for one. I did not sign up for it. Our development manager did. I can't think what it's called, though. There's one in West Palm we're going to, Florida Outdoor Expo. And there's another one. I think it's Orlando we're going to.
The Big Buck Expo?
That could be it. I'm thinking the one that we're going one in May and one in July.
I know there's one in Lakeland.
The one in July.
July is a Florida Outdoor Expo, I believe.
Florida Outdoor Expo.
West Palm.
Okay.
West Palm's a good 4 hours from us.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Florida's a big state. Like Fort Lauderdale is like four and a half hours from here.
That's pretty good haul.
Yeah. But Orlando's not but 45 minutes to an hour away. If you guys are in Orlando, I have to come visit you.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
So, but yeah, if you guys are in that area of Florida and you want to, I mean, hook up on those outdoor expos, and we'll you go find water feather boats there.
Yeah.
Do you guys carry inventory at the shows?
Oh yeah, we do.
Okay, yep. So you just buy one there, and there you go.
I'm just ready for that one to be at Sid's, so I can go up there and drool over it.
Start saving money now so you can dump all your raffle ticket money into it.
Yeah.
Nick, you got anything?
No, I'm good, man. Appreciate you answering all our questions.
Yep. Really, gents.
Yeah. Jeff, I really appreciate it, and I look forward to giving one of these boats away. Hopefully, like I said, hopefully I'm the winner of it, and I'll tell you how great it is. I'll tell all you guys how much I love this boat and how much you should buy it if I win it. But
I'll tell you, if you win it, it's rigged.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going to have my wife buy all the raffle tickets.
Exactly.
Yep. She's got better luck than I do anyways.
Other than that, we'll catch you guys next week.
Adios.
See you downstream.
As always, we thank you guys so much for being part of the Under Pressure Outdoors family and hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to help us out, first and foremost, if you haven't already, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast and tell us what you like about the show. If you want exclusive access to hunts and the ins and outs of specific WMAs and why we choose to hunt there and a lot of other sweet stuff we have planned, join our Patreon. So far on the docket for this year, we'll be hosting 2 whitetail camps and 2 small game hunts at a minimum. Plus, you'll get a sweet discount code to save when you shop the UPO Nation website, as well as get early access and discounts on future events. It's $5 a month, and it'll pretty much pay for itself. As always, if you have any questions you'd like answered on the show, reach out to us on social media or at underpressureoutdoors@gmail.com. We'll catch you guys next week.